The part, everybody hearing me okay? Correct? Okay. Okay, there it goes. All right, next on the agenda is roll call. And we have all council members here tonight. And then we're going to citizen input. If you're a citizen here and you'd like to address the council on an issue that is not on the agenda tonight, or even when it is, raise your hand. I'll give you up to 5 minutes. When you come to the mic, give us your name and address before you start. Mr. Crozier?
Did you say that we're not allowed to address any issues that's on the agenda tonight?
No, I didn't say that.
Okay. I misunderstood you.
My name is Michael Crozier, and I live at 625 11th Avenue North in Othello, Washington. Tonight, you're going to be asked to look at changing ONC 110220. This, I remind you, is an optional sales tax that the people have chosen to impose on themselves for a specific purpose. When the tax was imposed, when I was on the council, the ordinance was drawn so that the citizens the council asked for tax money from would know exactly where their taxes were going. So I would like to ask, what would be the need for blinding the taxpayer? A month ago, you were all sent a chart and showed how the current process spins the dollars in a circle. You were asked what value-added activity this produced, except that for running up the fixed and variable costs of government. And I showed it on the wall here. None of you has responded and explained verbally or in writing what the increased value was. What you will see here tonight is a bunch of emotional arguments to change this ordinance as to why you need to remove this arrow-like command given you by the people to put this money in the street fund and nowhere else. It's proposed to take the visibility of the taxpayer away. Why? Look at the ordinance carefully. It bids you to put those funds in the street construction funds. Many of the streets do not have adequate subsurface drainage and no base. You're not rebuilding and constructing the streets that were paved as cow paths yet. And you're not finished with that project that was begun a long time ago. You have heard no one speak but your own staff in favor of this. And I suggest that you put it up for a vote, as Mr. Johnson said when arguing the increase of 0.2% in the sales tax. Make your arguments to the citizens, see if they want to lose visibility on where their taxes go or give you money for some specific purpose other than the streets. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Crozier. Anybody else that would like to address the council? Okay, then we'll close the citizens' input time. Next on the agenda is the approval of the agenda. You'll hear a motion.
So moved.
Second.
Charles first, Gina second. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, the same? Right, and that passes. Do I hear a motion on the consent agenda?
So move.
Okay, Ken Kaler first. Who was second? Dan, you were second? Okay. Any discussion on that one? All right, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, the same? Okay, then that passes. All right, then current business. 4.1, confirmation appointment of new finance officer Spencer Williams. I've had the opportunity to meet him and interview him as well as the committees. So I thought the best way to find out who Spencer Williams is to have him get up. Why don't you introduce yourself to the community and tell us a little bit about yourself.
Thank you very much. Again, my name is Spencer Williams, and I've been visiting with Mike quite a bit today. He's been showing me the ropes. Previous to this appointment, I've been with the state auditor's office for just under 6.5 years. And I'm from Moses Lake. I have a family, a young family. We have 4 kids that range from 8 years to 8 weeks. So we're getting a lot of sleep in my house. Well, with my time with the state, we've been I've been able to travel around and see a lot of operations and a lot of governments around Eastern Washington, and I think that that experience that I've gained there will certainly translate well here with the city, as I'll be able to bring that here with me. And so thank you again. That's all I've got.
Yes, Spencer. Any council members have questions for Spencer? Okay, well, thank you, Spencer. Okay, do I hear a motion to confirm Spencer Williams' appointment to the position of finance officer?
I'll make that motion.
I'll second.
Gina first, Charles second. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, the same? Okay, well, welcome aboard. I'm sure we'll keep you busy. Okay, next on the agenda, consideration of A.J. Ochoa's request for deferral. Mr. Ochoa, do you want to address us on that, or? Okay.
Council members, thanks for your time tonight, put me on the agenda, and thanks. I want to thank the city for all their work that they've done to help us out with our project to eat west of town. Where we're at, I've talked to each one of you guys about our situation there. We've built the potato storage, and we're ready to hook up the water, and we're in a situation where we need water. We're ready to start potato harvest. And we were notified about a latecomer's fee just as we were ready to hook up the water, we had no idea about. And so we're zoned ag industrial open space. I'm asking not a deferral, but either to negate or make an amendment to for an open space ag industrial so we can get water and move forward.
Okay. Do you have water put into that? So the council can understand it better.
Only to add that I'd like to thank Mr. Ochoa and his team for coming in and visiting with us three times trying to find a solution to this effort. And the best and most applicable effort is if the council consider his request for deferral. He does have a four-phase project, as you can see up on the overhead. And I think if the request is, what I remember it, wanted to ask phases are completed. Is that right?
I don't remember requesting deferral. I was requesting either negate or amendment to the ordinance. We're zoned ag industrial and open space. We're not industrial. We built a potato storage there early on in the process. We asked if we can drill a well, and we were told we had to use city water. So, which is fine. We had it engineered with the We have an engineer here that did our work, and we, your city approved the engineer plans, and we put the pipe in, and we were just ready for the meter when we were notified about the latecomer's fee.
I'm sorry, Mayor, I jumped ahead. I apologize. To add to that, the construction project started, it had no water with it. Designs were brought in, city reviewed, approved the plans. Normally, if there's water associated with the project, the application for water is attached to the building permit, but because there's no water early on, there's no water application attached to the building permit. The time marched on, the fire chief did an inspection or looked at it and notified the city that there has to be water because of the insulation. We met with Mr. Ochoa and his team three different times. We went through different options on fire flow, availability of water, and all of that. After three meetings, the fire chief posed a compromise, and it was acceptable to all. So the water was then agreed to several weeks, and a few months went by after that. And in staff meetings, we talked about the need for water at the project, but it had not been requested yet. So about 3 weeks ago, Terry called, said, are you guys going to get water to your building? 2 weeks ago, Terry was met on site with a member of the developer's crew to talk about meter. Terry came and informed Mike and Debbie of the need for water. They do the assessment of fees. The assessment of fees went to Mr. Coachella, and here we are, $24,000 in discussions on whether or not the fee should be paid.
Catherine, can the council waive the fees?
As I understand it, this was infrastructure funded by the city. So these are reimbursement costs for the developers to access that city-funded public utility. And the way your ordinance is constructed, there is no mechanism for either forgiving or waiving reimbursement. It's essentially designed so that all of the developers who access that public utility end up paying their fair share of the cost that the city incurred originally in developing that infrastructure. So, no.
Is there a timetable on latecomers fees? I know on private developments after 10 years, the latecomers doesn't apply.
Yes, for private development, when you put in an improvement and there's a latecomer fee attached with it, it's 15 years. When the city does an improvement, it's indefinite.
Correct me if I'm wrong, a well was not an option to them?
I'm sorry?
A well was not an option to them? Because he mentioned that they offered to drill a well.
There were several options looked at. One was the use of the pond behind the Garrison Oil property. There were several looked at. This is the one that rose to the top during those three meetings that we had that the fire chief accepted.
My biggest concern is, when was this latecomer fee divulged to him? Was it on the, after it was done and, hey, by the way, here's your bill? Or was it when the process was going and somebody said, hey, when you're going to need water, this thing's going to come about and you're subject to set amount? I mean, are we governed by law to inform them beforehand?
Well, I'm not quite sure what the conversations were between the parties, but it is in your ordinance, so it's a matter of public record that anybody developing and attaching or connecting to that line is going to pay and set forth the formula in the ordinance itself.
What was your question more, when was he notified?
Yeah.
As opposed to, is there an ordinance?
Yeah.
The notification by the city of any fees to Illinois is when somebody says, city, when we have water, and we notify it as soon as we are asked for water.
Thursday, last Thursday. I had no idea about an application. I thought that when we filled out the building permit, that was the application for the water or whatever, because we had discussions about drilling a well, the fire plans, and the domestic water, the water being used. At no time did anybody say, hey, you got to fill out an application. So I filled out an application Thursday afternoon and brought it down. But the bill was given to me before the application was filled.
During our meeting, during the meeting that we had at Public Works, and there were 12 or 16 people there, all of us through all of our group, we drew it on a whiteboard where the line would come in, where it would go, and the focus of the meeting was on how do we solve the fire chief's concern for flow. It was not on any latecomers. However, city crew sitting there, when the main line was pointed out, Doug Jordan said there are fees associated with connecting to that line. Now, maybe we didn't hear that because we were all focused on the flow for to meet the fire chief's demands and not latecomers. But the city crew will tell you that they said that to me.
We never heard it.
Yeah, I understand. And I do appreciate that.
You know, we did a good faith thing, too. We spent $65,000 on the fire line there that we didn't have to, but we were doing it for the betterment of the community because we knew we have future plans for development there.
Council interested in maybe AJ2 or Mr. Ochoa in breaking that down into four or five payments over 4 or 5 years, so it's a lot less? I'm just trying to throw something on the table here to get a conversation going. So.
Is he subject to this for each phase? Or is it just on his on the one project?
It is based on front footage, you know, 669 front foot for the whole project, so it's a one time.
Tim?
Go ahead.
Yeah, I don't know who's right or wrong in this, but it looks to me like that I, according to the ordinance, I guess that payment would have to be made. But I don't see why we can't defer that and spread it over a period of time and keep the same amount of what it would be so it doesn't get escalated out of shape here. In other words, if it's set up, say, $25 a foot or whatever, maintain that $25. Don't let it go up and escalate according to the index to where it would be $36 in 2 years, 3 years, or whatever, and maintain that level, and then we can probably work out something with that. But the question is, you know, as he goes on down the line here to finish up this project, I don't think it would be a problem to maybe go ahead and pay that $25 for the total amount. But as far as this portion of it, I don't think it needs to be done because I don't think he was aware of it. And I think the fire line in there was part of the instigator that caused some of these problems as far as what went on, as far as actually needing water. Because as far as a spud shed, I don't think you need water. I mean, you don't have a fire problem with it in the first place. But it says that we have to have a fire flow. So that's one of the reasons that water had to be there. And if I look at it, this 600 and some odd feet, are we actually talking about Lee Road itself?
No, it's his property.
Or is it his property that comes through?
His front footage on the Sure Show's property.
Okay. But that's on Lee Road?
Yes.
Yes, on Lee Road.
What I'm getting at, his shed is not the full width of that 660 feet, right?
It's 300 and some feet.
The existing shed, you're correct.
So we're only talking about half of that 660 feet basically on Lee Road. I know. What I'm getting at, if you develop a piece of property and just because you own it, you don't have to pay that full frontage on it, right? It's just what you're developing.
If you need water, then you pay. If you look on, you pay. You can put vegetable patch in there and not use water and never have to pay the fee. It's when you look on.
Maybe Catherine could
probably clarify that. Where water utilities have been installed with public funds, there shall be permitted a connection to the city main only after payment has been made to the city in accordance with the schedule established in the chapter. So, and then the schedule is set forth depending on what street you're talking about. So it's based on the connection.
I have another question. Did I hear you say that I had an option to drill a well? Because I asked about drilling a well and I was told I had to hook up to the city water.
Yeah, there's an ordinance that prohibits drilling private wells in the city. Yeah.
Okay.
And it is zoned ag industrial?
It's zoned ag open space. It's not even industrial.
It just says in the city limits what the ordinance says.
It's a weird piece of ground. It always has been because it's, to me, it's a field. To everybody else, it's part of the city. But, you know, I get it.
Another example, if I can digress to the sheep here for a minute. There is ag ground and it's grown crop for years. Now it's electrified and there are 1,000 sheep out there. Wow. It's in
Six.
City limits. City limits prohibits animals in the city. But it's ag ground and that's ag use. So we have been kind of in-house toying with that issue since last week.
That's a whole other issue.
So Catherine, can we break down his payments? Or does it have to be all up front?
The way your ordinance is currently written, the triggering event is the connection. And the ordinance is worded so that payment has to be made before the connection is permitted. There is no indication in the ordinance one way or another about being able to defer that over basis. I'm a little concerned about going into a phasing concept just because typically these latecomer agreements are triggered on the connection itself. If you want to consider extending the time period for making that payment, then perhaps you might want to consider developing a policy that would apply to all people who are in this situation that request connection to the city utility, so that you have something that guides you and limits how long, for instance, this deferral period would extend.
Now, not having heard that, we as staff met with Mr. Ochoa numerous times over the last few days. We suggested he might ask you for that deferral, but we obviously didn't read it as close as.
This is nothing personal in your situation. I'm just thinking, you know, worst case scenario, what would happen if you allowed something like this to occur and didn't have some sort of limits on it? Well, if I'm a developer and I just want the connection, I'm just going to develop the first phase. Maybe I want to develop the other phases, which would then trigger those successive payments to pay off the original bill.
We had another business on South Broadway a few years back. Very similar circumstances. I bought a piece of property, was going to develop it, found out there was a latecomer's fee on that line that went down there. We did do a deferment for him, and I believe it was up to 10 years to pay it off, but he had to pay it off within that 10 years. I have no problem with a deferment. I would just like to say not pay it at all, but we can't do that. These are public funds, and we can't legally give away public funds. I would like to work out a deferment with you, if possible, if that would work out over time, that we could work out something with you.
Was the intent for the latecomer's fee for industrial use or just hooking up water? Because we're only going to use as much water as two households use in a year in one storage.
I believe, I might be wrong, I don't know. It helps pay for the cost of the line.
Isn't that what the
public funds to put it in, and then as people hook up, we recoup our money, like we do 14th again, or change that into four lanes for the schools down there. There's some late agreements that will happen there because there's nothing going on the property, like the Hampton property, for an example. People that are developing right now will have to pay up front as it's being done. So am I correct?
Correct. And it's not based on the usage. You're billed according to your usage, and that's separate from the connection charge. So the connection charge is based upon your school, front footage.
What's the timeline for completion of the other three units?
Could be 5 to 10 years.
I'm with Ken. I'd be willing to put it on a deferment for the total duration of the project, if that's our only option, because I kind of feel like the ball was really dropped all the way around on this deal. There's a lot of, well, maybes coming out of everybody's mouth on this.
Can I make another request if that's what we're talking? If we go that route, the original agreement started at $25, and they use $25 per furnace foot, and then they use a CPI index, and now it's up to like 37. I mean, it is what it is. When you guys put it in, there is no appreciation on that stuff.
And Ken Kaler made mention of that, I think.
Yeah, right. That's what I was talking about, that if we hold it at what we've got now or what that fee would be and not go with the escalated amount, if it is for 10 years, we'll hold it to what we got. And I think we can do that, can't we? Once we've made a, say, more or less a contract that it would be deferred to a certain length of time and hold to that one figure?
The figure I'm talking about is the 1999 figure of $25 a foot.
The formula talks about escalating by the CPI annually, and it did start at 25 back in 1997, and it has escalated to just over $36 a foot by the CPI. That's what the calculation, that's the number that was used to arrive at the $24,000.
So, Catherine, we'd have to rewrite our ordinance before we do this?
Well, I think it would be appropriate if the council, I mean, this isn't the first situation where you've granted a deferral on paying off the latecomer for the city, that I think that there should be a provision in your ordinance that sets some parameters under how that deferment is extended in terms of how long, what security you would have to collect that, does interest run or not. I think that needs to be expressed through a council policy, since the ordinance as it's written right now simply says the triggering event is connection.
In the meantime, you're ready to put potatoes in there right now and need water.
We've deferred putting
like
potatoes
last
since
week.
Saturday or Friday.
You have any suggestions, Ken? So I think start putting potatoes in the hookup. Legally, what can we do?
Well, I don't know if council has had a chance to think through what it would want the policy to look like, but to the extent you've had the opportunity to think through what you would like that policy to say, I would recommend that if you are going to authorize a deferral of this payment, that you express your motion in terms of kind of what that policy would look like so that it would be consistent with an amendment to the code that would insert that deferral process. And by that I mean in terms of how long you would grant a deferral and under what conditions.
Could we do this? Could we defer that and then look at it when he comes into the second phase and then continue this? But I think we ought to establish an amount now so we don't get into this escalated index when we come back with phase two or whatever. So he knows where we're going and where that amount's going to be.
Well, I think you have to establish two things tonight. You have to establish the amount that is owed, and you have to establish the acknowledgement that it's going to be paid. A portion of it is going to have to be paid upon the connection, because right now, as I said, your ordinance simply requires the whole payment on the connection.
Right.
So you're going to have to at least have partial payment for in consideration for the connection itself and including the water.
How did the $25 come about? Was that the actual cost of installing the, or was it just something just pulled out of the air?
I would have to, and staff, research that. The ordinance was adopted several years ago, so the most recent revision was in 1997.
I would make a proposal. I would pay a one-time $10,000 fee to be done with it, if it can be accepted by the council, if the ordinance can be, if it could be done that way. Because we don't know what that $25 is. I mean, it's just a number.
Well, the council's not in a position to negotiate because it already has adopted an ordinance, which is its law related to recovering the cost of that public utility.
Can there be amendment made to the law?
If they want to
I'd be willing to look at a lot of things right now. I know the cost of those potatoes not going in that shed are worth a hell of a lot more than $10,000. That I do know. I've lived here long enough. So, I know you did make mention that we could issue some type of amendment to get this done, but you asked us to revisit it first. Is there a way in this same meeting that we can move on to table this first till the end of the meeting, move on and see if we can have something written up? And I know I'm looking at you because I'm probably going to need you to do it.
Proposed amendment to the code.
Yeah, that reads correctly, and then we can address it at the end. Put it at 4.2A.
You know, if you think about that, there might be another option here since the fire chief is here. Somebody said something earlier about waiting until phase two when we hook up the water. When we hook up the water, that triggers this whole issue.
Right.
If the fire chief would say he could live with the first shed right now, let the potatoes go in, and he would be comfortable with whatever, go ahead and let potatoes in, you hook up at phase two, and that's when you pay the bill, that's when you hook up, and we're all good. And that doesn't prohibit you from putting potatoes in there. But the fire chief's got to go along with that. Does that make any sense?
You have to have water ready, Jay, for humidifiers.
Yeah, for humidifiers.
Yeah.
We need water for the potatoes, right?
Yeah.
For the humidification system in the... It's not for the fire lines. It's for the humidification system
right.
in the building.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to get you to hook on to phase two instead of right now. That's great.
It still needs the humidifiers.
And you can use it if the fire chief agrees. You can use it knowing that the pond is there or whatever.
But he still needs the water for the humidifiers.
For phase one.
Yeah.
He needs the water now.
Right.
I think fire, that stuff would put this thing on its ear.
No, we,
okay.
What the water is used for is it humidifies the air because the potato is a living being, and so it needs 98% humidity in that building.
Hey, I'm sorry, I grew up in Los Angeles, so.
Well, that's okay.
You know, and I would like to stay consistent what we did with the business on South Broadway. If we're going to do this, we need to be consistent with what we do. And over a 10-year period, I was kind of thinking break that $24,000 down over a 10-year period, which was roughly $2,400 a year for repayment on it. That's what I have on my mind, because that's what we did for a previous business on South Broadway.
I guess what I'm saying is that pipe doesn't appreciate. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
And the $25 was just a number that was pulled out. Nobody knows what the exact cost was.
And part of the reason it's appreciating is because of we have money invested in the ground, in pipe. You know, so we get some return off of our investment over the years where you see that appreciation going on. So part of the reason it was a piece
I can understand.
Does council feel comfortable on a 10, because we could get something drawn up here. You have a comment? Kathy?
I have a proposed amendment.
Oh, you have a proposed amendment. Okay.
If you were to amend ONC 12.16.285, subsection, subparagraph C, says where water utilities have been installed with public funds through or adjacent to platted areas, the property through which the water mains are extended or which are adjacent thereto shall be permitted a connection to the city main only after a payment has been made, and then I would insert, or satisfactory arrangements have been made, for payments have been made to the city. That will, and then the rest will remain unchanged. Does anybody follow that? That would give the council the discretion to basically enter into a payment agreement with the developer.
That sound good to everybody? Mr. Chair?
Sounds like I don't have a choice.
We're trying to work
ten,
again.
10 years.
We're trying
10 years.
Is what we're trying to do. So from here, we'll work on to an agreement from here. So, so do I hear a motion from anybody? Or we still need to talk some more?
No, I make that motion.
I'll second. Okay, we have a first and a second. Catherine, you want to read it again, the part that you're going to change on Section C? For the record?
Sure. Let me read the whole thing?
Yeah, we have a first and a second. Charles first, and who was second? Okay, Eugene?
All right, that's to amend the Municipal Code, Section 12.16.285, Paragraph C, as follows. Where water utilities have been installed with public funds through or adjacent to platted areas, the property through which the water mains are extended or which are adjacent thereto shall be permitted a connection to the city main only after a payment has been made, comma, and then add, or satisfactory arrangements for payment have been made to the city in accordance with the schedules established in this chapter.
Okay. Any further discussion?
I request that we do still look into that $25.
Yep.
When we finalize this agreement. Only for the mere fact that I'm going to reiterate that I do believe that the ball was dropped all the way around on this. So.
Okay. Any other comments or discussion? Okay, all in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Opposed the same? Thank you for coming.
So do I get water tomorrow, or?
Well, a payment has to be made, and there's a hookup fee.
And if I pay the hookup fee, can I get water, and then we'll figure out what we're going to do on the rest of the deal, or?
The meter fee is just over $3,000.
Yeah.
You know
that. Yep.
Yeah. So make that payment, and then you get hooked up, and I guess the council's going to kind of figure the rest of it out.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
With you guys participating, I'm sure, too.
So. I think that's.
Thank you for coming. Okay, 4.3 drilling well number 9 there, presentation. Larry?
There were 40 minutes.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor and Council. At last meeting, Kevin Lindsay of GSI Water Solutions presented his hydrogeologic prognosis as far as availability of water and what their ideas were for new well number 9, which the city would like to locate east of Highway 17, just north of Cunningham Road. What we looked at then was a recommendation that they had in their prognosis as far as what type of well could be drilled depending upon where we're located. If you'll recall, he talked about something called a monocline, which was like a dike underground that's somewhere parallel to in and around Highway 17. And if we hit a well that's west of that dike, he predicted we'd have a well fairly similar to our well 8, maybe 750 or 800 gallons a minute. If we're east of that monocline or dike, there's good likelihood we could drill a well similar to what the port has out in Bruce that could be upwards of 1,000 plus gallons a minute. We just won't know until the drillers out there, they're drilling through the different layers of basalt, the different aquifers that they'll run into, and it basically would be an on-site decision as far as what type of aquifer we're in and at what depth, what water quality and what water quantity we'd be getting into. So with that,
we look at three different possibilities that were in your packet tonight as far as what could happen out there on site. And we'd like to start by saying that any of the options we're talking about all have the same 20-inch diameter hole to start with a 16-inch diameter casing inside of it. And as you can see here, you can also see why I'm an engineer and not an artist. But the 20-inch hole we're talking about, depending upon where we are in association with that dike, could be as deep as 440 feet below the ground surface,
or as shallow as 240 feet. It just depends upon where those different layers of basalt are and how they kind of meander through the ground. The layer of basalt that the hydrogeotech would be targeting is called the Rosa basalt layer. And in other wells in the area, they've seen it as shallow as 240, as deep as 440. It just depends upon where it's located. Now, each of these well options would have the same 20-inch diameter to start with, and a surface seal that goes down with concrete or grout between the casing and the outer hole, that 4-inch annular space in there, to meet the requirements of the Department of Ecology. It says we have to have a surface seal to make sure we don't get nitrates and other chemicals from close to the ground surface contaminating down into the well hole. Where we start differing is at that layer below the Rosa basalt layer. If we're east of the monocline, we could then go down with a 16-inch diameter open hole down to a depth of about 920 feet. That's what the hydrogeos are predicting if we're east of that dike. If we're west of the dike, they're talking about 240 feet to the bottom of the 20-inch hole with 16-inch casing, and then the 16-inch open hole to the very bottom could be around 700, 705 feet. Those are options number one and two that are presented in the council package. Option one being east of the monocline, where we're hoping to get at least 1,000 gallons a minute of water quantity. Option two is west of that dike, where we'll probably get in the 750 to 800 plus or minus range. And you can see the cost difference then we're predicting between two, 691,000 for option one, 547,000 for option two. The difference being basically the amount of drilling and the depth the contractor has to go to. Kevin had talked about a 12-inch open hole below the casing. We're recommending 16-inch because if we do happen to hit a good lens of water, we don't want to restrict ourselves by the size of the hole and the size of the pump that can go in that hole. There's not that much difference between a 12-inch and a 16-inch hole, but that extra couple of inches gives us the latitude of having a larger pump and extra little conduits, like 1-inch conduits that we can put down hole to help us keep track telemetry-wise of what's going on, and also be able to help us with water quality issues by being able to grab samples at any given time. The third option is one that probably is more likely to happen. It's very similar to option one, where we have a 20-inch hole, 16-inch casing, grout the spacing between the two down to around 440 feet, continue drilling a 16-inch hole down to approximately the 920-foot mark below the ground surface. This also gives us the option that if we run into an area where it starts caving in or sloughing in, we put in something similar to the casing above, but we actually have them manufactured in or designed in slots that will keep the sloughage away from coming into the well hole and potentially harming the well equipment, but let the water pass through so we can still take advantage of the volumes of water that we think are down there. The way the design would be set up, we'd recommend that we have a space for a slotted liner, but if it turns out we don't need it, then the contractor doesn't get paid for it. Most of these items will be all unit price or unit quantity items, so the contractor only gets paid for what they actually do. The depth they drill, the length of the casing they put in. If it turns out that we don't have a liner, then we'll have open hole, good competent rock in there, and it means we don't have to expend those funds.
cost that we're estimating for option three is $770,000. And that's all three of those are total project costs,
including soft costs, sales tax, some city administrative costs, say for advertising for bids, any permitting costs, design inspection fees, for a grand total. These are estimates, and it all depends upon what happens out in the field, at what depths the driller and the hydrogeologist find these layers of gravel, or basalt, excuse me. What we're recommending at this time is option three, and have the specs set up so that the contractor knows that if we don't need to use it, he doesn't get paid for it. And with that, if there are any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
So what happens if they need to go another 200 feet or something like that?
That has happened before. We had one similar in the city of George recently where they went down another, I think, close to 200 feet. It also helped them get another 300 gallons a minute of flow. And the decision was made by contacting the city and the council at the time, and they made the choice to come up with the additional funds.
Isn't there some way they can tell what aquifer they're coming out of?
Yeah.
So if we're not getting a whole lot of flow, maybe we could go a little deeper?
Absolutely. That's one of the keys for having the hydrogeologist on site, is they can tell by the grindings that are coming up out of the hole what aquifer it's in, and also by the amount of water they're getting. They can predict what the quantity will be.
Do we have any idea of how much per foot it is?
We could take...
Yeah, we've got it in there somewhere.
Yeah, if we take 770,000 divided by 920...
You get a calculator?
That's about $837 per foot for a total project cost. If we're just talking construction, it'd be about $608 per foot. That includes the casing, the slotted liner if we need it, the concrete grout, the testing that has to go on, and the checking to see what type of water quality we have as well. That's based off of option three. The other two options will have similar but slightly different costs per foot depending upon how deep we go.
According to Kevin, though, on his first couple reports, so he really didn't see the need to go more than 920 feet.
Right.
Because the way the flows worked, mm-hmm. with what they got out of Bruce and what they could tell from well 8, we should be right in there between.
And it could be we could be shallower than that too. We don't want to go much deeper than the 920 because we have a potential to drill out of the Grand Ronde basalt, which ecology would require that we don't do. They don't want to commingle the waters from different aquifers.
Okay.
As long as we put something in the contract so that we can look at this thing, whatever Kevin or whoever is going to be our hydrologist or whatever, so that we can regulate this, whether we go down to 240 feet or the 440, and keep that regulated, so we can come back and review that before we actually sink our well on down or whatever we need to do. I guess I'm a little confused here. I know we're talking about when Kevin talks, why he's got that body English that's kind of hard to keep up with here, but it's my understanding what we're trying to do is get past that dike or whatever, what he calls a fold, to where it kind of goes one way or the other. But my thought was the further east you go, the shallower that well could be. And what we're showing here is 920 feet on the east side of that fold, where we're only calling 705 feet if we're on the west side. Aren't we reversing that, or am I confused here?
From what Kevin described to us, if we're east of the dike or the monocline, we could go potentially down as far as the 920 because of the different layers of basalt out there.
Are shifted.
If we're west of it, like west of Highway 17, then it could possibly or probably would be shallower.
Right, but I thought when you were stating that, you were reversing those.
Oh, if I did, I apologize. East is deeper.
Okay.
West is shallower.
That's the way I understood it anyway. I just want to be sure we're on the same track here. So.
If we decide on an option tonight, how long could it be before we're starting drilling?
We could have plans and specifications ready in probably 3 weeks. The caveat is we have to get approval from Department of Health and Department of Ecology to drill.
Right.
And we also have to get approval from the Adams County Water Conservancy Board to change the point of withdrawal. Now, last month, we submitted the application. They accepted it. They said it would probably be at least 2 to 3 months for them to go through their review. So we'd be looking at probably toward the end of the year before all the permit or approvals would be in hand so we could start drilling.
Okay. Got one more question here, too. Do we also have another leg of this we have to do is purchase a property, is that right?
Yes.
Once we're talking about committing ourselves to drill that hole, we want to be sure we've got that property in hand. So we've got a hole out there, we don't want it on somebody else's property. So that's something that I think we should work on. If we're going to go with this, we need to get that property purchased and that taken care of.
They go hand in hand, the property owners are here tonight to hear this presentation.
Now, Larry, there's a well there already, is that what I understand?
I believe there's a shallow, what we call exempt well for the house.
Yeah.
Is there two out there for the field too?
There's actually three wells. Three? I got one at 210, and two others at 300.
And have you tested the water?
The domestic well over by the water hole, that was tested monthly. It's a community well. And the other well, I think, is tested. I'm not sure.
Anybody ever say anything about nitrates or anything like that?
No. Haven't heard anything.
Anything else, Larry?
No, sir.
Any more comments? Okay, so I hear a motion to approve the drilling of well number 9 with a 20-inch hole and a 16-inch casing to the depth of approximately 440 feet below ground surface with a 16-inch open hole between 440 and 920 below ground surface and a 12-inch slotted liner approximately 240 feet in depth. That's only if we need it, correct?
Only if we need it.
Right. Only if we need the slotted liner.
I'll make that motion.
I'll second it.
Gina first. Okay. Can you deal with second? Okay. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same. Okay. Thank you, Larry.
Thank you.
Okay. Consideration to the Adopt Public Works Standards book. Larry and Terry, who wants to go?
Good evening, Council, Mayor. Tonight we're going to talk a little bit about the standards book. We brought this to you earlier in the year, went over a few things, and we've been designing this ever since, so hopefully tonight we can get this adopted. We made some changes in our standard book, several changes, a few I'll address. These standard books are probably the best thing to protect the city and help the developer out. The earliest book, or the current book that I have right now, was dated in 98, so it's quite old. So we're going to bring that up to date here. These standards, they help enable the city to treat all developers fairly and equally. They enable the city to be consistent with all developers, engineers, and contractors. They allow developers to know what to expect and what's required of them. Reduces cost to the developer and the city. Allow the city to standardize on particular models of equipment such as fire hydrants and keep spare parts storage to a minimum. Now we've had a book made up and we're asking to establish a cost of $35 just for the labor to put this book together and have it available up at the counter for contractors and developers when they come into the city and they want to know what the city standards are so they have one. Most of the prints that are out there for the developers require the contractor to have a current book of standards with them on site at the development. This is a 1-inch meter service here, and we've made a few corrections here. A lot of these are down in the numbers down here in the detail legends. We've changed these numbers. They change all the time, so in order to keep up with it, we have to change these currently. We've added a camel hump, what we call a camel hump here. This is to develop some place for a contractor when he decides to dig, it doesn't really know where it's at, and he hooks onto this line. This gives a little flex here before it pulls the line out of the corp. It saved us several times already having this here. This is a meter setter. We require all new developments and in the future here to put in a setter. You got another slide there, Mike? This is a 1-inch inch and a half and 2-inch meter setter. We had a bypass right here. We've taken this bypass out. Now it's just a stabilizer here for this upright. This is a meter setter as well. It didn't used to be a meter setter. It used to be you had to bend your copper, stand them up, freestand them. We found out that we're running into problems when the developer compacts this back. He normally pushes these either in or out, and then we have a problem getting the meters to fit, getting them to seal up. So we've changed this detail here, and we have a single check back here. This is a solid bar. It is consistently a setter. It just eliminates the hassle. We had some issues with the school where we had the new school. We had a 2-inch out there, and they did the same thing. It pushed on it, and then pretty soon we were in a situation where we had to dig it back up and re-straighten it out. So. This is a fire hydrant detail here. A few changes here. We've changed this valve box and can here with this lid. It doesn't have any ears up here anymore to break off. We've also added blocks underneath the hydrant, underneath the valve. We've also increased the pad here for clear space around this hydrant. We have a lot of people that landscape around these things, and we have a lot of shrubs and trees here. So this gives city and fire department staff plenty of room to work on this hydrant in the future. So tonight that Public Works and staff is recommending the adoption of the design standards and establishing a purchase cost of $35 for the book. If you have any questions, I'll take them now.
Sure. Have we got anything like say we're putting in an 8-inch line, 12-inch line, or whatever, and you come in and make a 90, and as far as thrust blocks and whatnot to control that, is that in this also? Because I know a lot of times contractors like to forget those, and that does create problems.
I don't have a detail up here, but it is in our standards book.
Okay.
You all can't see it here, but that's a thrust block here for our 45s and 90s and our end caps.
Thank you.
Good question. Any other questions?
I have one there. This is just for information. Terry, can you tell the council how long some staff have been working on the project?
In years? Let's see, I've been here a little over four. No. We've been working on this for quite a while. It's been something that they've really needed to do. It takes time. I've got a lot of staff time into this. I gave this final version to one of the senior guys, Dan Quick, and 8 hours, sat down and went clear through this book, verbiage, details, everything, to make sure everything is correct. So we've been working on this probably March, April, back and forth to GNO, a lot of input, a lot of verbiage to take out a lot of the guesswork where we end up kind of hashing it out in the field. So it's been up to now several months. It's been a long process. Takes a lot of time to designate a day to set a couple people down, and one work on sewer, one work on water. It's just, it's been an ongoing thing. So it'd be really nice to put this to rest here, and so we can move on and just amend certain parts of it as we go.
Any other questions? Looks good. Thank you for all your hard work. Do I hear a motion to accept the design standards and the purchase cost of $35?
I'll make that motion.
Jack first and second. Any further questions? All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, the same?
Okay. Thank you.
Jerry, that passes. Okay. 4.5, pre-treatment ordinance. Larry?
Thank you again. The pretreatment sewer ordinance is a requirement of the Department of Ecology that pretty much all utilities or cities have that have their own wastewater treatment plant and collection system, or what they call a publicly owned treatment works, POTW. The ordinance itself is based off of or patterned after a standard that Department of Ecology and the Environmental Protection Agency have developed for communities just like Othello, that doesn't have a lot of its own staff to have a pretreatment program. It's set up basically to protect the city, the city's workers, and the investment the city has made in its infrastructure and treatment facilities. It primarily works with industrial dischargers, what we call significant industrial users or minor industrial users, and sets up the ability for the city to monitor what's being discharged into its system. Also gives the city the ability to issue permits for new construction, particularly industrial or commercial. Also to allow the city to go inspect just to make sure that these industries and commercial establishments are doing what they said they're going to do and they aren't adversely affecting the system. It's a long document. It's 52 pages. It has all sorts of standards in it that go back to looking at fats, oils, greases, pH, temperature, what you can and should not discharge to the system. It's worked well in a lot of other communities that have, say, problems with fast food restaurants and lack of grease traps. Also in communities that have a substantial amount of industrial or other commercial dischargers. We put together a little summary on the explanation of issue on the agenda package, and rather than just read through the entire document, if there's any questions, we'd be happy to answer them.
We all look at Gina.
I read it.
Okay. The city attorney's office.
You read every page of that.
Changes.
I did too. I wrote most of it. Yeah.
So, no questions? Okay, do I hear a motion to approve the pre-treatment sewer ordinance?
Do it.
I'll make that motion.
Dina first, Charles second. Any further questions? Okay, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, the same? Okay, that passes.
Thank you.
Good.
It was a good collaborative effort with staff and council. Well, we all worked well to get it done.
Thank you, Larry.
Thank you.
Okay, waterline agreement with Othello School District. Eamon?
Thank you, Mayor. In the interest of time, I'll try to make this brief. The construction of the new elementary school required a fire line, and the question before the City Council tonight is, will you consider the interlocal agreement with Othello School District? The need for the fire line was obviously driven by fire flow to the new school. The design and the fire line in one location and not owned by the city. The fire marshal, when he came to the final inspection, determined that the city needed to own the line, needed to be on the north end of the building. So changes were made, discussions were held with the school district, and the result of those discussions is in the interlocal agreement. The city will, in effect, own the line. The school district will maintain it. They will provide insurance, and they will create an easement for the water line. So, being consistent with the fire marshal's desires, the city bent over backwards to work with the school district to make this project happen. So, we would ask that you consider approval of the interlocal agreement between the city and the Othello School District. And I would like to add that the city attorney's office has drafted this agreement, so they have approved.
Any questions? Okay, do I hear a motion to approve the waterline agreement with the school district?
I'll second it.
Okay, a second. Any further questions? All in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, the same? Right, that passes. Thank you. Okay. Reverse copying charge policy. Eamon?
Thank you again, Mayor. The question before the council is consideration to change or amend your existing copying charges to reflect customized copying, such as disk or program. The current copying charges basically are driven by the state, which is 15 cents per. However, we have had a request for a customized CD to be prepared. We normally use Word, I believe it is, and we have a normal process. If the normal process for copying the CD is not what the requester wants, then we have to customize that. To customize it takes our time and a different process. So we're asking for the adoption of that verbiage to be included in the policy and just allow us to charge a fee for RCW 43 for customizing the CD.
Questions? Okay, do I hear a motion to adopt the new copying charge policy and procedure for public records as presented?
Make that motion.
Second it.
Ken Johnson, second. Any further questions? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, the same? Okay, and that passes. Thank you. Okay, let me get to this next one here. Budget committee appointments and confirmations. Get that up here. I want to go over that and make sure everybody's on board. I noticed
last
Mark Spohr is on here. What's that?
The last year's.
These are last year's. Mm-hmm. Right. So don't get hung up on dates and times. It's only which committee. And I'm sorry.
Yeah. it is last year's, but we'll go through them, make sure everybody's okay where they're at. If you want to change a different one, maybe you're interested in something, we'll see if we can trade people around. And where Mark Spohr is, Eugene, that'd be you. So I'm assuming you can get down here. I don't know how it works for you, but sure. You let us know.
Yeah, a lot better than you.
Okay. All right. Contracts is Ken Johnson, Ken Kaler, and Dan Deaver. Everybody comfortable with that?
With that.
Okay. Are these the actual dates?
No.
No, those are last year.
Okay.
Street Fund, Charles Garcia, Mark Snyder, and Gina Darrow.
Pass it over to Ken Kaler. Yeah, he seems to have a little more time to go to that.
Okay, so the Street Fund will be Ken Kaler, Mark Snyder, and Gina.
Thanks.
Ken, does that work for you?
Yeah.
Okay, just making sure.
I guess.
Okay, Solid Waste will be Eugene, Mark Snyder, and Ken Kaler. Everybody comfortable with that? Okay. Law enforcement would be Ken Johnson, Mark Snyder, and Dan Deaver. Everybody okay on that one? Okay. Park and Rec, be Charles Garcia, Eugene, and Gina.
Okay. Skipped one.
You skipped.
Oh, did I skip one? Okay. Sewer and Water, Gina, Dan, and Ken Kaler. Will that work?
Yeah.
And then general government, Ken Johnson, Ken Kaler, and Charles Garcia. That works. Okay. All right. And code enforcement, Mark Snyder and Eugene. Everybody on board with that then? Okay, then you'll be getting a schedule for when things are going. And for Eugene, we'd rather have it in the evening. Like, what time are you talking?
5:30 or 6:00. 6:00 would be better, but.
So those that are on solid waste, six?
Yeah.
Solid waste, where are you at? Park and rec? And code enforcement.
Yes.
We have a problem at 6:00?
Depends on the day.
Okay. Is there a better day?
No Tuesdays, Wednesdays, or Thursdays.
Oh, okay. That makes it easy. Okay.
That's when I'm down in Twin Cities.
Well, so. 7:00 Monday night.
So Monday night.
Yeah, there you go.
You get that? Is that all right? Okay, that's good. Okay, we'll see what we can do. We may have to have some at noon. Okay. So it looks like. So. Okay. All right, well, thank you, everybody, for cooperating with that. Okay. Discussion of OMC 11.02.020 regarding sales tax revenue. Mike and the committee that's been involved. So Mike, you want to start? And then anybody on that committee that was there want to share some things, we'll let you go next.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor and Council. This is a subject we've been kind of batting around for a few months. In your packet, there is a letter from the city attorney that kind of delineates some things and has some insights. And so I believe right now it's just up to council as to whether you want to leave this ordinance, 1985 ordinance, I believe it's number 722, I'll leave it as is. If you want to change the ordinance, so that's up to council tonight. For your pleasure.
Committee members, you have any comments that you've been visiting about it?
We looked at this and we had a particular question that was arose back and by the attorney and the mayor back then that said that after this particular year that the ordinance may be illegal to earmark it. We haven't found anything to justify that. We kind of talked it over and we thought about just leaving it where it's at, but we need to really look at the street fund because it is really being funded a lot out of the general fund too, and we're not getting the full picture every year when we make up the budget because we have our bonds that we've been paying and they haven't been included in the street fund to show the true picture of it, and we'd like that to be done in the future. There is one clarification. A lot of people that I've talked to think that this was a publicly voted half-cent tax. It was not. It was council passed. It was all council passed in 85. And 722 come out of a threatened petition to have that tax recalled. And the compromise to it was in Ordinance 722, which committed that half cent that the council imposed to the street fund.
Thank you. Any other comments from people on the committee?
Tim, I wasn't on that committee, one for sure, but looking at this, I know we put more money in it than what that actual amount is, but I don't see any reason why we can't maintain what this ordinance more or less says. And but I think there should be something in there with no restrictions about what we can add more money to it, because if you look at this, maybe if you look at that ordinance, that's all the money that you'd put into that street fund. And I don't think that's quite the picture that we're getting, like what you're saying from the bond issue and from other added monies that we put into that street fund, we may have twice that much in there some years. So I don't know whether we should amend that or leave this like it is and continue to take the other money out of the general fund. And I don't know, maybe I'm opening up a can of worms here, but I just want to clarify that that's not the only funding that will go into that street fund.
As it goes right now, and my understanding is, this half cent actually goes through the general fund to start with, because
right.
we're issued a one lump sum check from the state on the total of one, we get one penny of the sales tax. So basically half of it goes to the street fund, and it comes through the general fund. Anyway, the state don't recognize 722. We do as a city ordinance on that half cent, and basically you just take that money and just transfer it over to the street fund anyway. So it's just a matter of shuffling numbers is all we're doing here.
Right.
The street fund is still going to be funded fully to what we do every year, but I think we just need to restructure it to show the full picture of what we do, because it is a lot more than at the end of the year when we have our street fund budget for expenses. It's actually a lot higher because of our obligation bonds that we're paying out of another fund.
Of course, one of the methods we use to fund, and this is basically for projects, if we're talking about street projects, and the method we use for that is first of all, we present council with a balanced budget, and that's take care of operations. And then when for projects, we use that foam, what do we call that? The
capital.
Yeah. And then we have council pick and choose what they wanna, what kind of projects they wanna include. And as we put the projects in, we see the bottom line changing. And when we get into the negative, we decide how are we gonna fund this. And so we say, well, we're gonna have to take some money from the utility tax fund or whatever we decide to do, whatever council decides to do. So that really doesn't change. The fact is we'll be putting in about $165,000 more into the street fund with sales tax. So we'll be using a full second half percent of the sales tax. And so that means right away $165,000 of that project money now is in that is already in that fund.
Right.
That means we won't be moving as much money into that fund to take care of those projects every year. So, I mean, that's how it would look. I mean, that would be the picture. So, I don't see this as a devastation in any way. I think council still will have the ability to make the decisions as to how we spend the money, how what we do, et cetera, in terms of the projects, street projects.
Catherine, we can add to this. No issue with that, correct? But money is the same.
No, the ordinance doesn't restrict how much money you can put into the street fund. It just requires that you proportion that amount of your sales tax revenue to the street fund. So you just need, it's really a bookkeeping issue that you've created for your finance department, because they have to make sure that as long as that's the council's policy, that the books conform to that standard.
Okay. I think that's what I made mention of, is the worrying of it, because they're, whoever, are wanting to know where each allocation of those funds go to, and then in reality we put way more than what we receive.
Well, and that's why, you know, although it's not strictly a legal issue, from my perspective, rather than creating a future where you're having to constantly monitor that, if the council historically has put more money in the street fund than the policy required it to do, then you have not only met but exceeded the expectations of the citizens that you were attempting to appease back in 1985 by adopting the ordinance. So from my perspective, it doesn't make sense to continue to force your finance department to adhere to a issue and kind of monitor that internally when the need for the policy has kind of expired, because out of necessity you're having to put more money in the street fund than the policy ever required. That's just my two cents.
Oh, and I agree. I believe that the city's outgrown that policy quite a bit.
Any other comments? Do I hear a motion? Okay. No motion means it stays as it is. Okay. Thank you, Mike.
Thank you.
Okay. I have an unfinished business. New business. Council will also receive the following, which department heads' August reports. So I hope you get an opportunity to read that and see what's been happening in the city. Mayor's announcements. The city has received a grant for $9,500 through the Regional Transportation Planning Organization to conduct the Main Street Improvement Study. Also, the city has also received a grant for $19,500 to replace old street lighting with energy-efficient lights and banner placement standards. Othello is one of nine statewide recipients of this funding, so we're in a small pool there, but we received it. It's pretty neat. Also, WCIA, Washington City Insurance Agency, will audit the city for cyber liability beginning Tuesday, September 25th. Take a look at our policies and how safe we are and things like that. So, budget committee meetings, of course, everybody knows, begin in October. And also, this is pretty neat. We were approved by the state Public Works Trust Fund for the 14th Avenue and the industrial area sewer and water. We got approved for that, about $6.8 million. Low fund loans there. So that's pretty exciting. So we'll be looking at that through the budget process and getting it out there for a bid so we can get the lowest possible prices we can from the contractors. Any other announcements? No? Okay, this meeting.
Point of information regarding our new finance officer. I was talking to a guy Saturday morning, and come to find out he's the finance director at Fort Campbell. And he said, I saw that ad in the paper. He said, but it was this summer. Well, I think he could have done all right.
Okay, well, this meeting's adjourned. Thank you, everybody, for coming.